Howdy, everybody, and welcome to another BP Movie Journal, the show I do where I talk about the stuff I've seen since the last time I did one of these. I'm David. It's just me. And you might have noticed it's been a while since I've done one of these. 3.5 months or thereabout. I am not even going to attempt to talk about everything that I've seen since then in this one episode, which is not to say I'm not going to talk about it all eventually, but I'm going to get through as much as I can in the short time that I have tonight, and then maybe next week I'll try and get more caught up, and eventually I'll get back on track with these. But the good thing is, a lot of this, the good thing for me, I don't know if it's good for you, a lot of this is probably going to go pretty quickly. Because A, it's been a while since I've seen some of this early the stuff from 3.5 months ago, so I won't have as much to say. But also some of these, a lot of this was like end of the year catch up. So these are like things that you've probably heard me talk about in a few cases that we're going to talk about today. You've heard me talk, you've heard Tyler, you've heard Scott talk about them. So let's just dive in and we'll see how far I can get. Let's start with a movie. I guess this is technically like an award season movie, but it was flew completely under the radar, was overlooked, and for good reason. It's not very good. It's directed by Matt Brown. It's called Freud's Last Session. It imagines a long conversation between Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis. Sigmund Freud played by Anthony Hopkins, C.S. Lewis played by Matthew Good. Despite that good cast, it's a very boring dialectic type movie, because it's not really a dialectic. It's so firmly on C.S. Lewis's side and so critical of Freud's denial of, you know, a creator or anything, an afterlife, anything that we can't. It's a movie that's like against that empirical worldview of. So I felt like it was a little anti-science and a little too eager to make Freud look pathetic. To say a good thing about it, Liv Lisa Fries plays Anna Freud, Freud's daughter. She's great, and the scene, it's been a while since I can't remember, in which he is analyzing his own daughter are the best scenes in the movies. It's like very, very uncomfortable. All right, next up, a documentary called Immediate Family, directed by Denny Tedesco. I watch this because I'm a bit of a rock nerd, and this is about kind of like the Muscle Shoals documentary many years ago. This is about a group of studio musicians, mostly studio musicians, session musicians who have backed up a lot of huge names. Definitely... It scratched the itch that I wanted as a rock fan, but it's not great cinema by any means. Okay, after that, I watched Saltburn. You've heard me say so much about Saltburn, but to go back to my mindset at the time, just like so shocked that this movie was so much fun, because Promising Young Woman was not very fun. And also, I think the thing about Saltburn, more so, that stands out in comparison to Promising Young Woman. Promising Young Woman is a movie that I think shows no real curiosity at all about its characters or about the world. It's there to instruct. Whereas Saltburn is so curious and open-ended, and like let's it has this feeling of like, let's see where this goes, let's see what's going to happen next. It felt very just freeing. It felt like a filmmaker freed from whatever was whatever in herself was guiding her in making Promising Young Woman. Next up, let's talk Ferrari. Again, this is a movie that I just talked about. It was in my top 10 of the year. Obviously, I loved it. And like I said on the podcast, a lot of why I loved it isn't because I like am so engrossed by the story of Enzo Ferrari or interested in getting to know him. I loved it because Michael Mann just knows how to make shit look cool in a way that is not trying hard to look cool. It is the essence of cool, which is like, it's not cool to try hard. So it's just relaxed and cool. You know, a lot of, especially with the men in his movies, and this one's no exception, a lot of the coolness comes from a lack of response, a lack of facial expression, just like, this is a cool guy with a cool face in a cool outfit. Let's just look at him. Isn't he cool? And that's true of Enzo Ferrari in some scenes, but also of many other of the people in the cast. Then I finally saw, this is in December, mind you, I finally saw Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. I'm glad I waited to see it because I got the chance to see it on a true IMAX screen, not the, what do they call it, LIMAX at the multiplex, like a true enormous IMAX screen in 70 millimeter. It was an all-encompassing experience. And yeah, you've heard me talk about it last or just recently with, because it was on Tyler's top 10. But I for some reason, I seem to respond to Christopher Nolan more when he's telling a true story, or I guess in the case of Insomnia, like retelling a story that's already been told, because it doesn't feel like he's trying to like impress me with his cleverness. This movie is just the tumultuous interiority, I guess, of Oppenheimer is what stood out to me. Okay, again, a movie you've heard us all talk about plenty. The next one is Justine Triet's Anatomy of a Fall. I'm trying to think what to even say that I haven't already said. Now Messi the dog has become such a celebrity that it feels obvious and like bandwagonish to point out how cool the dog in the movie is. But good dog, good movie. And yeah, another great performance from Sandra Hüller. I think I talked about this. I think this was on the Patreon when we did the BPs. So sign up at patreon.com/battleshipretention. And I talked about how Sandra Hüller is an actor who is, in both of the movies she was in this year, is not asking you to like her. She has very little of that ego, I think. What's next? Oh, another awards contender that got forgotten, although this one's not bad at all. Roger Ross Williams' Cassandro. And I went in thinking, like, okay, this is a documentarian. This is a biopic. This is going to be rote. This is going to be like some made-for-TV bullshit. When I say made-for-TV, that doesn't mean anything anymore. It meant something in like the 90s, 2000s, I guess. But it's a documentary about a luchador, a gay luchador, true story. His name was Saul Armendariz. And it's played by Gael Garcia Bernal. But Roger Ross Williams actually brings a lot, and his cinematographer and editor, whoever they are, don't have in front of me, actually brings a lot of character and momentum and urgency to the movie. Cinematographer is Matthias Benicino, editor is Alfonso Gonsalves. it's a really well-made movie, and of course you've got Gael Garcia Bernal at the center, and he's always fantastic. Next up, Christian Petzold's A Fire. This one was I was into it from the beginning, and into the character of Leon, because I don't like him, but into the performance and the character as written was really fascinating. It really takes it bumps it to the next level when his publisher or agent or whatever shows up, and there's like a new person in the mix. It's a really good movie. Another great performance from Christian Petzold, mainstay Paula Beer. I've said before, surprising number of movies this year about kind of pathetic men. All right, another movie you just heard me talk about, because it was in my honorable mentions, Paul B. Preciado's Orlando, My Political Biography. I don't know what to say that I didn't just say on the podcast, but I guess just I love someone in like a French New Wave way of just like that feeling of like I've got a camera, I've got an idea, and I've got some people who are willing to help. Paul B. Preciado puts together this sort of moving, but also funny and also strange and puzzling sort of memoir slash adaptation of a Virginia Woolf novel slash survey of what it means to be trans and to transition. Very cool movie. All right. Next up, I had heard good things about this movie. I was so glad that they turned out to be true. John Francis Daly's and Jonathan Goldstein's Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves. It's obviously a throwback to with Chris Pine's character as this like kind of well-meaning blowhard. It definitely reminded me of something like Big Trouble in Little China. But as John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein showed in Game Night, they have a great handle on comedy in both writing and directing it, and also editing it. But even the action scenes were cool. I love Michelle Rodriguez. Becoming a big fan of Sophia Lillis. Just what a fun movie. Now I took a break from all of the end of the year catch up here to fill in a blind spot. A movie I'd never seen before, Francis Ford Coppola's Rumblefish, and my God, what a beautiful movie! This is a new. I don't think I have a Francis Ford Coppola ranking off the top of my head, but if I were to make one, Rumblefish would be very near the top. Hell, maybe if I were feeling cheeky, I'd put it right at the top. I don't know. But absolutely gorgeous movie, dreamlike, oniric, I think is the word that I'm looking for there. But I might be mispronouncing that, so I probably shouldn't have said it. Another great cast, like The Outsiders, but also much more adult than The Outsiders, and like I think The Outsider has plenty of sadness too, but this is sad in a more final, fatalistic way. But the new, it's my new, probably my new favorite Mickey Rourke performance. It's so beautiful and sad, and the sound mix and the use of the sparing use of color among the black and white just really makes it just an achingly beautiful movie. I just loved it so much. Then on to another movie you've heard me talk about, Menus Plaisirs Les Trois Gros, which is Frederick Wiseman's documentary about the Michelin star restaurant, Le Trois Gros, in it's kind of rural France, I guess. Yeah, I guess, like I said on the podcast, because this was, I think, in my honorable mentions for 2023, Frederick Wiseman movies, like, there's a lot of how interested are you in this topic? And I happened to find the topic of restaurant and what food means to people who can afford to have something, have food mean something more than just survival or even just pleasure. Like, people who have the luxury to take food very seriously and have the money to organize their lives around it. It's very fascinating to me.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, moving on to David Fincher's The Killer. I definitely found the movie most effective as a kind of almost bitterly sad satire of, like, present day work and gig economies and the lack of job security, the expendability of anyone, and putting that into a slick and often quite funny and often quite violent hitman movie. I liked it. I didn't love it. I think, I mean, it'd be like, I don't think, you know, if someday American Cinematheque or someone does a full, like, David Fincher retrospective, like, The Killer will probably be the second half of a double feature. I don't know with what necessarily, but, it does seem like a, I guess, minor David Fincher, but still, minor David Fincher is still pretty great. All right. Next up is the Disney animated film Wish, which is just really bad. It's just like, it's so lazy. Just, you know, that within the brand recognition of, like, the star, the famous, like, star that you wish upon in Disney that flies over the castle at the beginning of every Disney movie. Like, let's make a movie about that. And it's just grating. You know what's not grating, but actually is more great? Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget, speaking of animated movies. Yeah, I was definitely a little skeptical because I'm a big fan of, or I was a big fan of Chicken Run back when I saw it, but it's been a long time. But yeah, the you know, the did the Jailbreak or Breakout movie. Yeah, Jailbreak movie. Did Tyler and I ever do that topic? I remember we talked about doing Jailbreak movies. That was what the first one was. This one is more of a heist, but it still has that great, clever timing and the great sense of humor, not just in, like, that sort of DreamWorks animated movie sense of humor of just, like, let's have some characters snark or whatever. Like, there's legitimately funny character-based comedy, both in what the characters say, but also there's, like, slapstick and everything. All right, let's keep on keeping on. and talk about Bradley Cooper's Maestro. Again, what am I going to say? I just talked about it at length because it was in my top 10, which I know I know a lot of people don't like it as much as I do. Definitely, I mean, Bradley Cooper's prosthetic nose did not need to happen. But also, I mean, some of the like prosthetic makeup, the old age makeup is great, but did you need to have Bradley Cooper have a big nose? It's ridiculous. And yeah, I know people are making fun of his, like, I think what people perceive is his desperation to win an Oscar with this sort of thing. But I feel like people who write it off as that either didn't see the movie or weren't able to get on the wavelength of how passionate the movie is about life in the arts. This is the stuff that I talked about on the podcast, on the Best Of podcast, so you already heard me talk about that. But it's the kind of movie I can see myself watching again, because it's fun and funny, and it's like wish fulfillment to like, what if I were like so rich that I could just do whatever I want all the time. Also, it's funny, like, I can't believe I saw this movie within days of quitting smoking. I feel like this movie would have made it tough to quit smoking, because everyone smokes the entire movie, and as a only recently quit recently ex-smoker, it looks so lovely and enticing and luxurious and cool. I'm sorry to talk about cigarettes that way, but I'm obviously yearning a little bit. But it's been going on 4 months, so I think I'm doing pretty well. All right, another movie that was my top 10. Wow, I saw all of these within a short period of time. Chan-Nan Hung's The Taste of Things. This is another movie, like, it's very different from Maestro, but also is just caught up in the rhythms of the life of someone who has dedicated themselves to a passion, which in this case is food, much like in Menus Plaisirs. But Menus Plaisirs is a documentary, and Chan-Nan Hung photographs the food and the food making processes with such beautiful painterly cinematic grandeur. It could never be mistaken for a documentary. Let's keep moving. Poor Things. Yeah, Yorgos Lanthimos's Poor Things. A lot of stuff to say, a lot of stuff going on. The headline for me is that the movie is very funny. I laughed a lot. It maybe not at some of the more like sophomoric bodily fluid related things, but then some of the other sophomoric like pratfalls or physical comedy or things like that. Yeah, incredibly funny, incredibly beautiful to look at. A lot has been made. Obviously, Emma Stone at this point has won an Oscar for it. Mark Ruffalo was nominated for an Oscar, but I think his performance in the movie might be my favorite, because it's another like Sandra Hüller where there is no ego. I think obviously the character is very egotistic, but you can't really see Mark Ruffalo the actor's ego. All right, next up, watched another Netflix animated movie, Leo. And I thought it was fine. Adam Sandler voices a classroom pet who can talk to kids and starts different friendships. All the kids, as they like, each kid takes the pet home for a weekend and he becomes friends. And then Bill Burr plays or voices the turtle that he shares a terrarium with when he's back in the classroom. Yeah, it's a fine time. Not sad. I don't regret seeing it. Okay, next up, Andrew Hayes, All of Us Strangers. Andrew Hayes is an actor, or an actor, a filmmaker I've really liked since Weekend, and I liked 45 Years and Lean on Pete. This one seems to be like, seems to, even though, I mean, 45 years obviously got a lot of attention at awards time, but this one seems to have propelled him to a new level, even though I think it's my least favorite of them, which is not saying much. I still really, really like the movie. But I think I liked it most in terms of just four really sturdy performances. Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, Claire Foy, and Jamie Bell are all fantastic and touching and human. But yeah, this might be the first Andrew Hay movie that I didn't cry during. So make of that what you will. Okay. Next up is... Oh, yeah. Okay. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which I was super into. And that's coming from someone who... I liked Into the Spider-Verse. Everyone liked Into the Spider-Verse, but I was a little bit at a loss to understand why people loved Into the Spider-Verse so much, but I'm there with Across the Spider-Verse. It's more boundary stretching and reality stretching. It has more fun with playing different forms of animation off of one another and then putting them in, actually not just playing off, but actually putting them in conflict with one another. Yeah, the scene where Miles escape from the sort of like headquarters of all the Spider-Men is like edge of your seat thrilling, and that's not just because of its kineticism, but also because of that feeling of like, which is actually within the movie, it's sort of a structuralist type of formalist type of thing where because Miles was bit by a spider that wasn't from his universe, he's kind of an anomaly, and there are fears that he threatens the fabric of the universe. And in that sequence, you almost feel like the world is going to tear open, and the movie's full of great stuff like that. So yeah, can't recommend it highly enough, but you already know. You've already seen it, I'm sure. Next up, documentary called Four Daughters, which is falls within a subgenre of documentary, very much like the sort of modern day kind of king of it is Robert Greene. And obviously, but it goes even back to like Symbiopsychotaxiplasm, and things of like dramatization and recreation within the documentary that becomes part of the documentary. So Four Daughters is a documentary about a woman who has four daughters, but the two older ones are not around. I don't want to give too much away. It doesn't take too long into the movie to like learn why they're not around, but to make this movie and tell the story of why these two older daughters are not around, the director, Kauthar Benhania, hired two actresses to play the older daughters. So they're like recreating scenes of when the older daughters were around with the real mom and the real younger daughters. But then they also have an actress playing the mom in some of the more difficult scenes that the mom doesn't want to be a part of. So it's, yeah, like with Robert Greene in terms of like, with like Bisbee 17 and Procession and stuff, like there's a therapeutic sort of like getting it out to acting this out. And it makes people uncomfortable, but it also helps. It helps these girls, I think. All right, I've already talked about this, but the movie, the first movie of 2024 that everyone's wrong about is Bryce McGuire's Night Swim. I haven't really bothered to read enough of the negative reviews. Maybe I should, to fully understand what people don't like about it. From what I can gather, it's the familiarity of the premise and the plot beats. But to a certain extent, isn't that kind of like genre's bread and butter? Isn't that how genre works? Is that we know what the framework is, we know what to expect it, and the real meat of the movie is what goes on around that skeleton. And that's what I liked about Night Swim. It's very fun. It is willing to be funny, even in the midst of being dark or scary or gruesome or violent or whatever. It's Bryce McGuire is clearly having fun with the different situations, and pro Night Swim. All right, I'm wondering if I should just wrap up here. I got through all of December, and like a week or so of January. So I think I'll probably just wrap it up here, and then we'll next week I'll talk about some more.